I'll be damned. They actually went through with it tonight. They actually gave us a finish in the main event. Tag Team Championship Unification to close out tonight's episode of SmackDown between RK-Bro and the Usos. I thought for sure they were going to hold off and wait until the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view when they first announced this match, but they gave us a finish. Not a clean one, but they did give us a finish. The Usos are now the unified WWE Tag Team Champions with a win in the main event. They gave us a finish to close out the show, but the bigger news, or as big, that's going to have a lot of people talking, is the announcement that Michael Cole made just prior to the main event. We were wondering if there would be any kind of an update on the women's tag team titles tonight on this show after what happened on Monday when Sasha Banks and Naomi walked out of Monday Night Raw. They had been advertised for the main event. It was going to be a six-pack challenge to determine who would go on to wrestle Bianca Belair at Hell in a Cell for the Raw women's title. We all know the story by now, or some of the details anyway. There's a lot of details. There's more news coming in every day about this Sasha and Naomi stuff, including now about their contracts, which apparently are coming due very soon. And I will have a full update on Sasha and Naomi and a lot to say about that on Sunday. Right now, we talk about what Michael Cole announced tonight, which is that Sasha Banks and Naomi are indefinitely suspended. He ran through what happened on Monday. Michael Cole, obviously being fed lines by Vince McMahon in his ear, announced that Sasha and Naomi let us all down. Not me. Didn't let me down. You don't speak for me. But he said that they let everybody down, the entire WWE universe, on Monday night with their actions. He said they were supposed to participate in a six-pack challenge. Instead, they left the titles with head of talent relations, John Laurinaitis, and they walked out of the building. He announced that Banks and Naomi have been suspended indefinitely for their actions and announced that they will have a tournament to crown new women's tag team champions at some point in the future. He didn't give an exact date. And as soon as he made the announcement about there being a tournament to crown new women's tag team champions in the future, the first thing I said is, what tournament? What tournament? You need teams to be in a tournament. What teams? What teams? What division is there? There is no division. There are barely any teams. There are no real teams. And you're going to have a tournament. They struggled to fill a Royal Rumble with women this year. They had to call women back from the past. They had to call women back from other promotions. They had the Impact Knockouts champion in the Royal Rumble this year. You think out of the goodness of their heart to do a nice thing for Mickie James? So now we're supposed to get excited about there being a tag team tournament down the road at some point to crown new women's tag team champions. They have never taken these titles seriously. Not from the moment they were introduced and 6 weeks later they put them on the fucking Iconics. They didn't take them seriously then. They don't take them seriously now. Get rid of them. They are useless. Get rid of the paperweights. This is the perfect opportunity for them to just junk them and pretend that they never existed. Because that's pretty much the way WWE has treated those titles for the majority of the run that they have had over the last few years. Yeah, they already have women's tag team titles in NXT. I never really understood that decision either. The original concept of the women's tag team titles is that they could float, the champions could float from one brand to the other, and we had women's tag team title matches on NXT with the WWE women's tag team titles. This was back, I think, when Sasha and Bayley had them. And that made sense. That's what I've been advocating for the men's tag team titles. That's one of the reasons why I was advocating for a unification in the first place. And I'm happy that we have unified tag team champions, even though we don't really see the men's champions, you know, appearing in NXT and truly going back and forth that much between brands. But that was how the women's tag team titles were originally. And then they decided that they needed their own women's tag team belts in NXT. Those belts are every bit as useless as the ones on Raw and SmackDown. You know what I would be in favor of, though? I would be in favor of this. Put the titles on Toxic Attraction. Let Toxic Attraction make appearances on all the brands. They have a hot act. They have an act that works right now in NXT. They've got the tag team titles down there. If you're going to do anything, just put the belts on them and let them float from brand to brand. There's no need for a tournament. The tag team belts are at least part of why we're in this whole fucking mess in the first place. And I just sit back and I laugh at the idea that all of this is due to the stupid tag team titles, these fucking belts that have been nothing but a headache. And it's not as if they've ever been made to be valuable, so why even bother? WWE, they're just window dressing. They're just doing what they think people want to see to make people happy. They have no interest in women's tag team titles. They never did. Now, as far as Sasha and Naomi are concerned, people, especially now, after the fact that they addressed this on television tonight and they had Michael Cole on there talking about what happened with Sasha and Naomi, and they put the graphic up for the six-pack challenge on Monday that never happened. Oh, it must be a work, or they're turning it into a storyline. Always the possibility that down the road they could incorporate this into a storyline, but no, it is not a work. This is WWE and Vince McMahon's way of embarrassing and burying Sasha Banks and Naomi for what they did, because he's on the warpath and he's upset. That's what this is. They did the same thing with Steve Austin when he left. That wasn't a work, but they buried him on the way out too. It's exactly what they're doing with Sasha and Naomi now. Go on television, make them look bad. I know some of you noticed, as soon as the show went off the air tonight, I went on WWE Shop, just like I know some of you did. But if you're not aware, all of the Sasha Banks and Naomi merchandise as of tonight has been pulled from WWEShop.com. If you go on that website and search or go in the search box, you could type in Charlotte, you'll get a ton of merch. You could type in Bailey, who hasn't even been on television for about 9 months. You'll find merch. Type in the name Sasha Banks, you get nothing. Type in the name Naomi, you get nothing. This is their way of punishing them. This is not a work. Doesn't mean it can't turn into something down the road, but the question now honestly becomes, will we ever see Sasha Banks and Naomi again on WWE television? If their contract situation is such that their contracts are due in the next 2-3 months, and they could legitimately be on the way out, this situation becomes a lot more interesting all of a sudden, and potentially very messy, because they walked out on Monday night. WWE, if they want to get really nasty about it, if they don't come back to work, they could potentially freeze their deals and prevent them from leaving and going somewhere else. They've done that with people before. They've extended their deals. They've added time onto their deals for time missed due to injuries and surgeries, or if people walk out, they can freeze your deal, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. We don't know how this situation is going to turn out. But it is a real situation. It is a very fluid situation. Again, it feels like there's changes and news coming out about this every single day. One of the reasons why I'm happy, frankly, that I've been waiting, and we'll have the podcast on Sunday. Episode 757 is not going to be one to be missed. You already know what the top story is going to be. Because everybody who's been talking about this on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, the story, I mean, it just keeps changing. And we're getting new quotes, and we're getting new reports, and we're getting new information, and then tonight comes the big bomb that they've been suspended. And so now we wait to find out what their fate is. Are they going to come back? Is Sasha Banks going to leave? Has Sasha Banks had it? Has she had enough? And also, I think, you know, a lot of people might be saying, well, you know, Solomon, so you might think that she'll do better in AEW. I'm actually not one of those people who thinks that if Sasha Banks was to get fired or quit and leave or let her contract run out, well, she'll just go to AEW and be so much happier and she'll be a big star. I actually think Sasha Banks, if all these reports are to be believed, and if Sasha Banks is unhappy with how she has been used or feels that she's not being utilized enough on television in WWE, do you honestly believe that Sasha Banks going into that women's division in AEW, the way that women's division is right now, is going to be so happy? I think she'd be fucking miserable. I think Sasha Banks going to the women's division in AEW, while she would be a tremendous addition to that division, she would be fucking miserable. I think that would actually be a terrible idea. So I don't know what the future is going to hold for her in the short term or the long term. There's a lot of questions about this and her contract status. We don't know. We don't know everything. There's definitely more than meets the eye. I do believe that this was in part a creative issue. And like I said, I'm going to have a lot to say about that on Sunday. Because I am not sympathetic to WWE. But there's definitely more than meets the eye to the situation in terms of what sparked this, what led to this. This feels like something that has been building, at least with Sasha, that's been building for a while. And it came to a head this week. But make no mistake, the announcement and everything, you know, going on television, they didn't have to go on television and address it, just like they didn't have to put that statement out after Raw Monday night, that very odd statement that they issued, and all the bullshit about how they were uncomfortable working with two of their opponents, which is complete fucking horseshit. I don't buy that for a second. It was meant to smear them and make them look bad. They could have kept very quiet and dealt with this behind the scenes if they didn't want to make a big scene about this, but right now, they're very upset. They're lashing out. They're saying, okay, you're going to walk out on us, well, we're going to turn this back around on you and make you out to be the enemy. That's what this is. They've done this before. It doesn't mean that it's a work. It doesn't mean that because they didn't use their real names on television, oh my God, it must be part of the storyline. It's not. But they are now suspended. And the women's tag team titles are vacant. There was no Ronda Rousey on SmackDown this week. Likely because of Sasha Banks walking out on Monday. The belief is that Sasha Banks and Ronda Rousey were probably going to start their program tonight because even though Naomi was going to win and go on to wrestle Bianca Belair at Hell in a Cell had she not walked out, Sasha Banks was probably going to be challenging Ronda Rousey for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Obviously, with her walking out, that is not going to happen. So they obviously didn't have anything for Ronda Rousey to do. No open challenge tonight, nothing. They're probably trying to figure out what their next move is going to be, which honestly is probably going to be pushing Raquel Rodriguez into another match with Ronda a lot sooner than they wanted to. So she wasn't on the show at all tonight. Neither was Drew McIntyre. He was over in the UK promoting the ticket sales for Clash at the Castle for people who were actually able to afford tickets. I can't tell you how many tweets and emails I got from people. We have a lot of people who listen to the shows and watch the streams who live over in the UK who were complaining to me like you wouldn't believe about these ticket prices. So you see Solomonster, here I am going on my currency converter trying to figure, because they're giving me all these prices in British pounds, and I'm like, well, what is this American? And honestly, I'm looking up some of these ticket prices, and maybe I'm just used to it here in the States, and I've been to some WrestleManias and stuff, and they're treating this like a WrestleMania type show. First big stadium UK show in 30 years. I'm looking at some of the ticket prices you guys are showing me, and I'm like, all right, what's the big deal? This is normal. I look at these prices, some of these prices, and they seem pretty normal to me. You'd be shocked by what I spent on some of the WrestleMania tickets, and it was, and I didn't necessarily have great seats to all these WrestleManias. Some of them I had pretty good seats, but for a lot of people, and apparently inflation is not just an issue here in the U.S., it's a major issue in the U.K., people were shocked when they saw these ticket prices. And yet they've already sold apparently about 40,000 tickets, maybe not as many as they expected to. Those prices will come down. If you want to go to Clash at the Castle, just wait. Just wait. Because if there's sticker shock when people are looking at these ticket prices, they will come down. If people don't buy them, they will come down. And then you'll be able to go to the show. But anyway, we're gonna get into all this. We got a lot to talk about. Very newsworthy night, mainly on SmackDown. Not a lot of news, really, other than a few new matches announced on Rampage for Double or Nothing, which is coming up not this weekend, but next Sunday in Las Vegas. We are going to start, though, with AEW Rampage, because Rampage did air tonight before SmackDown, yet again. It was a little bit later. Usually, the last week or two, it's been 5:30 Eastern time. Tonight, it was 7 o'clock. So the hour before SmackDown is when we got Rampage tonight. So we're going to start with that. Hit that like button. Get those super chats on. And I do see them flooding my screen here. And so I'm sure you guys have a lot to say, especially on this whole Sasha and Naomi thing. So get those on in. I will read your messages, and I do thank you for your support. But let's get into this Rampage thing so we can get into SmackDown. And then get to your questions. We opened with the House of Black taking on Evil Uno, Preston Vance, and Fuego. To go from all of this to fucking Fuego del Sol and Evil Uno just feels like quite the come down here. So we had Murphy giving Fuego a Pentagon-style arm breaker, and Brody King going at it with Evil Uno for a little bit. We got Fuego hitting Murphy with a Spanish fly. Preston Vance got the tag, and he was the House of Fire. He suplexed Malachi Black, sent Brody King to the floor with a clothesline. I mean, the action here wasn't bad. It's just one of these things where, you know, the House of Black is getting a tune-up match here before the pay-per-view, and there's not a whole lot here to get excited about. I see the Dark Order, I immediately lose interest. You know, I know Evil Uno's a nice guy. They're all nice guys. John Silver, you know, he's got this great comeback in his matches when he's a House of Fire. And I'm not saying they're not talented, but they're not very exciting to watch. The Dark Order is not lighting my world on fire when I watch these shows. In the end, Brody King hit the Gonzo Bomb on Evil Uno to pick up the win. After the match, we had Death Triangle appearing on stage. Penta pulled off a tarp, was covering something in the aisleway on the ramp. And he pulled off the tarp to reveal a tombstone that had the House of Black's name on it and the Double or Nothing logo. So that match now is official for the pay-per-view. Hey, remember, House of Black against Penta, Pac, and Eric Redbeard, because Phoenix was injured. They were going to do this match of Revolution. Instead, they ended up doing it with Eric Redbeard in there on the, I guess it was the buy-in, I believe. And they had an excellent match. That was one of the best matches I've seen all year. One of my favorite matches is that six-man tag from the Revolution pre-show. Shout out to Tim, who just subbed, Sasha Banks. Obviously, not a whole lot for her to do. She's sitting at home, and so she's hanging out with us on the stream, giving you a thumbs up. Sasha is suspended, so all she can do is join us here and give you guys, when you hit that sub button, the thumbs up. We're going to have to employ Sasha if she loses her job. You know that. We're going to have to make her a member of the family here. I'm going to have to start giving her a cut of all these super chats. She's going to need the money. So I'm looking forward to this match. Now we have Rey Fénix back. Eric Redbeard even was great in that match. But now we got Rey Fénix back. So as great as that six-man was at Revolution, this should be even better. Backstage, we had Lexi Nair interviewing Billy Gunn, Colton Gunn, Austin Gunn, and Max Caster. They showed footage from Dark Elevation, which, you know, damn it, I missed it this week. They showed footage of Anthony Bowen suffering an injury. I don't know if he actually got injured again or if that was just a cover for a follow-up surgery that he needed. Remember, he had a knee injury. I don't know if he had surgery or if he was just hurt and rehabbed and then came back. He had a knee injury that kept him out for a while. And he tweeted a photo from a hospital bed tonight during the show. So it appears that he was back in the hospital to have some kind of a surgery or follow-up surgery on his knee. So he's going to be gone for a little bit. All three men were asking Billy what they would do without Bowens. Billy pushed one of his sons, I think it was Austin, out of the way to put his arm around Max Caster. And he referred to Caster as son. And Billy wished Bowens well and said they were going to have a big old scissors party when he got back. Billy Gunn ignoring his own kids and treating Anthony Bowens and Max Caster like his actual sons is actually pretty entertaining. Tony Schiavone was backstage with FTR. They accepted the challenge from Roppongi Vice from Dynamite on Wednesday to a match for their Ring of Honor Tag Team Championship. So that will take place live in Vegas on Dynamite this Wednesday. They're going to be in Vegas Wednesday, Friday, and then for the pay-per-view on Sunday. So this match is not happening at the pay-per-view. It's happening on Wednesday on Dynamite. Cash Wheeler made it very clear that they also, much like Roppongi said, they also want to win the AEW Tag Team titles. They also want to win the IWGP Tag Team titles. That is also their goal. I wouldn't be surprised if we see FTR, you know, the new belt collectors, if they win the IWGP belt at Forbidden Door next month. They haven't announced any matches yet for the card. Would not surprise me if they walk out with more gold on that show. Sean Spears was advertised tonight for a match with a giant. They didn't say who his opponent was going to be. They only said that his opponent was going to be a giant. This is ahead of his cage match with Wardlow on Dynamite next Wednesday with MJF as the referee. That giant, quote unquote, turned out to be Big Damo, the former Killian Dane from NXT, making his AEW debut. I don't know about Big Damo being a giant. You know, he's a big guy. I mean, he's a big boy. Giant is probably pushing it. Chris Jericho said he liked the sweater that he was wearing. He wasn't wearing a sweater. He was wearing his fur. He's a very hairy man. So anyway, having him in here in this match, you know, Spears battling Damo meant more than it would have if they just put Spears in the ring against some local guy or, you know, one of the people from Dark Elevation that not a lot of people know. At least he has a name. At least he's got some size. So it meant more, him going in there and beating him. It was a nothing match. Didn't even go a full 2 minutes. Damo missed the Vader bomb. Spears connected with a running knee strike before hoisting him up for the C4, and he picked up the win. After the match, Spears cut a promo on Wardlow and said that their cage match would main event the show on Wednesday. So now we know what the main event will be. It will be the cage match. I don't think Damo is signed. I think this was one of those one-and-done things. I mean, they could bring him back for stuff in the future, maybe a battle royal or something, but you know, they wanted someone with a name that some people, at least, would recognize, wrestling fans would recognize, to put in there and give Spears you know, a more legitimate win going into the cage match, which he is going to lose against Wardlow next week. But he is not signed to a contract as far as I know. Johnny Elite. We were talking about John Morrison when he debuted on Dynamite on Wednesday. And I said, you know, it's not official until Tony Khan puts up the graphic. Well, guess what? There is no graphic because Johnny Elite is not signed to an AEW contract. That was effectively his tryout. Will he get signed to a deal? 50-50. But he is not under contract to AEW. He's not officially in the company. Neither is Big Damo. We went backstage with the Undisputed Elite. Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly were talking about them being potentially in the finals against each other in the Owen Hart Foundation tournament. Meanwhile, the Young Bucks challenged the Hardys to a super kick party at Double or Nothing. Feels a little quick to be putting these two teams back in the ring together. I know you can do it, and they're going to do it. They're going to wrestle next Sunday, and it'll be a big match, and you know, people will be into it, but I don't know, I feel like the Hardys, they're still relatively new, and we only had the first real interaction between them, what, a week ago? All of a sudden, they're wrestling at Double or Nothing. It just feels kind of quick for that to be happening. It'll be an attraction, though. It's just another attraction for them to add to the show. Speaking of the Owen, we had an Owen Hart Foundation quarterfinal match with Chris Statlander replacing Hikaru Shida, taking on Red Velvet. Boy, you know, we went from the Shida controversy, which is kind of a lame controversy, to this Sasha and Naomi stuff. Quite the difference here between these two. Ruby Soho sat in on commentary since she's wrestling the winner of this match. Jade Cargill was sitting at ringside with Kiera Hogan and Mark Sterling. Statlander gave Velvet a very impressive one-arm military press while she posed with her one free arm. She posed with the other bicep. And then slammed her. Outside the ring, she slammed Velvet right in front of Jade's crew. And they cut to commercial break. After the break, Velvet hit her final slice finish. And Statlander kicked out. Statlander hit a blue thunderbomb for two. And Velvet put her down with a face-first plant. Statlander tried for her Big Bang Theory finish, but she got rolled into a pin attempt by Red Velvet. Statlander reversed it, though, and she got the three count. The correct finish. Chris Statlander wins this match. Kiera Hogan got in the ring. She attacked Statlander. Ruby ran down to make the save. She was fighting off Hogan and Velvet until Jade got into the ring. And Jade put down Ruby. They were about to beat down Statlander a little bit more when out comes Anna Jay. This kind of came out of nowhere. Anna Jay runs down. She has a crutch that she ripped away from Mark Sterling, and she started swinging it around, and the heels left the ring at that point. Later in the show, Jade was in the back. She was not happy by what happened, and she said that at Double or Nothing, it's going to be her and Anna Jay for the TBS Championship. So you can add that match to the list of matches for Double or Nothing. I thought they had a good match. I thought Statlander and Velvet, you know, for the time it lasted, they had a good match. I'm liking this new non-alien version of Chris Statlander. I like that power move she did there at the beginning with the Gorilla Press. Now, it's going to be Soho now, one-on-one with Statlander in the next round of the Owen. And, you know, I'd like to see Toni Storm against Chris Statlander in the finals of this thing, because I just think if you do that match, it's hard to predict a winner there. I mean, think about it. Of the remaining matches that are left, in terms of unpredictability, Toni Storm against Chris Statlander, I think, is the most unpredictable of all of the matches that they could potentially do. And I also think that would be a pretty good match, and a match we haven't seen before. That's the match that I would do. I have a feeling AEW is going to have Britt Baker against Chris Statlander in the finals. I just find it hard to believe they wouldn't have Britt on the pay-per-view at all. So I think it'll end up being probably Baker and Statlander. Again, if it's me, I do Toni Storm and Chris Statlander, and I don't care who wins. If Toni Storm wins, that's a nice feather in her cap. If Chris Statlander wins, she's one of the AEW originals. She's, you know, again, reinvented herself now. I would be perfectly fine with a Chris Statlander win. I might actually be leaning towards, you know, favoring a Chris Statlander win. But I think that match makes the finish a little more unpredictable if they do that. They aired a fun little training montage video showing Tony Nese in training with Mark Sterling and Hook training with Danhausen ahead of their tag team match on the buy-in pre-show. Danhausen was lifting 5-pound weights. At other points, he was sitting down eating a bag of potato chips, watching Hook work out. Yeah, this made me think of as I was watching this. It made me think of that. It was a great video. It was very, very entertaining many years ago. It was a similar type of comedy training montage that WWE did with William Regal and Eugene. And it might have been ahead of the match that Eugene had at SummerSlam in 05 with Triple H. Was it 05? I don't know if it was 05. Might have been 05. But That was a funny segment. This kind of reminded me of that a little bit. Then we go from one segment I enjoyed to one segment that I absolutely hated. This is the worst stuff on AEW television every week. We had Scorpio Sky, Ethan Page, and Dan Lambert. They were already in the ring. Nobody gets entrances on this show. They were already in the ring for the next segment. Sky called out Sammy Guevara and said that he wanted his TNT title back. And I sat here struggling to figure out what he was talking about because I knew that he is the TNT champion. I know he won the belt back, you know, many weeks ago from Sammy. I'm like, his belt back? What's he talking about? He's the champion. Did he lose the title? Did I miss something here? I had no idea, or I completely forgot that Sammy, I guess, had jacked the title from him. Sammy Guevara had stolen the TNT title. I guess I just forgot. Because I don't give a shit about any of this. I'm barely paying attention to this, apparently. So they cut to the parking lot. They showed outside. Sammy is out in the parking lot with Ty Conti. And he has the TNT championship. He's holding it hostage. And he takes a sledgehammer. Now, I don't know which TNT title this was. I don't know if this is the one that had the Sammy and Ty's DNA on it. You take one of those black lights that you see on CSI and shine it over the belt, and who knows what you're going to find. So I don't know which belt this was, but they took a sledgehammer. Sammy did. Sammy took a sledgehammer to the TNT title. Frankie Kazarian showed up. He cut a promo on Scorpio Sky while Sammy and Ty made out in the background. And then he took the sledgehammer, and he started smashing the TNT title with it. And then Sammy said that he wants the match. I can only assume he's referring to that mixed tag team match that he's been asking for on TV. But the heels were literally for weeks, the Men of the Year and Dan Lambert were walking around with two TNT championships when they took it from Sammy Guevara. Remember, Dan Lambert was wearing one around his waist until Scorpio Sky told him, you know, to stop doing that or whatever. This is when they were teasing he might go babyface. It was all just a swerve. We had two TNT titles on television for weeks. Who cares if he's taking a sledgehammer to one? They have another one. Why are we supposed to care? Why is this such an egregious thing? They have a second one. It looks exactly the same. It is no different. Again, except maybe for the DNA on it. So that whole thing was just stupid. I'm still wondering who we're supposed to be cheering for in this feud. Every single person in this program is unlikable. Sammy and Ty are unlikable together on TV. He's out there acting like a little brat. Scorpio Sky, there could have been a babyface run maybe in him there, and then they completely, you know, flipped that. It was a whole big swerve. I still say that Ethan Page should be the one to take that title from Scorpio Sky. There was a way they could have gone with this, and I think it was a mistake not to. But Ethan Page, Dan Lambert, Scorpio Sky, Ty Conti, Sammy Guevara, I mean, Frankie Kazarian, I'm kind of just indifferent towards. I don't really care much about what he's doing on television. So put him aside. Nobody is likable in this feud. I don't care about any of these people. And this is what's going on with the TNT Championship right now. The TNT title booking is the single worst booking of any of the programs right now on AEW television. Tony Khan has to fix this. Coming out of Double or Nothing, once they do the stupid mixed tag that they won't shut up about, they've got to change course and go in a completely different direction. And get some new blood into this TNT division, because whatever they're doing here, this ain't working. This is consistently the worst stuff on AEW television every single week. The main event, we had Brian Danielson and Jon Moxley against Dante Martin and Matt Sydal. William Regal joined on commentary. He was sitting at one end of the commentary desk in between him and Chris Jericho on the other end. And Jericho had Jake Hager standing behind him. In between the two of them were Taz and Excalibur. They were the buffer between the two of them. Sydal got into a slugfest with Moxley before Moxley caught him with a hot shot, sent him to the floor. Danielson came off the apron with a running knee, and the show cut to their final picture-in-picture. After the break, Danielson hit a double underhook slam to Dante Martin all the way off the top rope, transitioned immediately into a lapel lock. And I thought that might be the finish, but he struggled and struggled, and eventually Dante was able to get his foot on the bottom rope, and he earned the rope break. Danielson tagged out to Moxley, and they were about to try for some combo offense. Sydal cut them off, and Sydal hit a top rope meteora onto Danielson on the apron. Dante hit the double jump springboard onto Jon Moxley in the ring and got a near fall out of it. He calls that the nosedive. Martin tried for a top rope drop kick to Moxley, but Moxley blocked it and gave him a pile driver, but Dante kicked out. Moxley started raining down the anvil elbows to Sydal, or rather to Dante, while Danielson delivered elbows of his own to Sydal. Moxley hit the paradigm shift to Dante Martin, picked up the win for the Blackpool Combat Club. As Moxley and Danielson were leaving, they were attacked by the Jericho Appreciation Society on the ramp. They were outnumbered, they were outgunned, and they were brawling on the ramp as they went off the air. Excalibur said they would keep their tape machines rolling. We're going to keep our tape machines rolling. What is this, 1985? So he says that, and then they go off the air. They did not show Brian Danielson getting his legs stuck in between the ring and the ramp at the end of the show. Remember when I was live on Wednesday night? I'm doing my thing. I'm a one-man operation here. I'm trying to focus. I'm trying to concentrate on what's going on. And I got messages coming in. Oh, Brian Danielson was injured. Brian Danielson was hurt at the Rampage taping. And my heart sinks because I'm thinking, oh, God, he tore his knee out or something. That's awful. So I go looking around and I see these still shots of his leg caught in between the ring and the elevated ramp that they used for Dynamite this week. And I kind of like the elevated ramp. You know, we don't need it every week, but that's an old WCW thing. I like it. I think it works. I don't have an issue with it. But I thought it was kind of strange. How did he get his legs stuck? Like how the gap is not that big between the ring and the ramp that he would just suddenly fall in. It's not like a fucking a manhole cover that was missing and you fall into a sewer. So I thought that was a little strange. But once I saw the video after we went off the air on Wednesday night, there was fan cam video all over social media. Once I saw that, you can blatantly see the cameraman. I mean, in the middle of this crush of people trying to save this guy. Remember many years ago, I was very young when this happened, but many years ago, there was a little girl who fell into a well. I forgot her name. It might have been Madeline. I forgot her name, but whatever. There was a girl that fell into a well, and it was like a big story. I remember there was an old episode of the Gary Shandling show where he fell into a fucking well. That was the whole episode. People, the show started, and where's Gary? We don't know where Gary is. The whole storyline for the episode is he fell into a well. He fell into a hole in his backyard. There's certain things I remember from when I was younger. So it's like, I mean, the gap is not that big. What's going on here? But I see the cameraman is right there in front of his face. Like, he's in the middle of everything. He's kneeling down. He's got that camera, you know, a foot maybe away from Danielson's face. And there's no Tony Khan either. Tony Khan wasn't out there. So I'm thinking, if this was a real situation and Brian is writhing in pain and he's screaming and he's selling it, Tony Khan would probably be the first guy out there. And they wouldn't have a fucking camera shoved in this guy's face. So that right there told me, okay, this was a work. And then in the end, Danielson, he hobbled off and he was fine. But in case you were wondering, was it a work or not? Or is AEW just trying to cover for a real thing that happened? They put the whole thing up on their YouTube channel as soon as the show went off the air tonight. So if you want to see it for yourself, you can go watch it on YouTube. It's not all that exciting. Although I will say the funniest part of it is watching Jon Moxley try to move the ring. He is trying to move the ring all by himself to separate it so that his tag team partner can get his leg freed. He wasn't successful, but he tried. See, that's a real partner right there. That's a real friend. So I thought we had some good action on the show tonight. A few new matches announced for Double or Nothing, but nothing earth-shattering. Jessica, yes. Baby Jessica. Thank you. I don't know why I said Madeline. Baby Jessica. That was a story many, many years ago. Bryan Danielson tonight played the role of Baby Jessica. So, before we get into SmackDown here, Rampage next week, back again at 5:30. Eastern time, but this whole schedule is completely fucked. I mean, they're getting bounced around here, and this is the way it's going to be until the playoffs are over. So they're going to be airing a lot earlier again next Friday, and I believe Rampage is live from Vegas next week. They usually are live the weekend of a pay-per-view, but there will be no Rampage review, and there will be no SmackDown review. So I will not be live next Friday. Just be aware of that, because next Friday is the House of Glory show, Holy Grail. We've got Will Ospreay coming back. He's going to be going one-on-one with Low Key. And a lot of great matches on the card, so I'll be on the call for that, and I will not be here. So a little programming note, just so you guys are aware, you're not wondering, where the hell is Solo Monster? Solo Monster's right here. You got me tonight. Let's talk about SmackDown. Holy shit, Baby Jessica is now 36 years old? Wow. Wow. Yeah, that does make me feel old. But on SmackDown over on Fox, we had the Bloodline open the show. The unified champion Roman Reigns, along with Paul Heyman and the SmackDown tag team champions, the Usos, were out to open the show. Paul Heyman talking about tonight's winner-take-all unification match. Roman was soaking things in for a moment and asked everybody to acknowledge him. Paul Heyman took the mic. And Paul Heyman called Roman Reigns the GOAT. He name-dropped Bruno Sammartino. He name-dropped Hulk Hogan. He name-dropped Stone Cold Steve Austin. He name-dropped Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And John Cena. And said that Roman is better than all of them. He would stack each and every single one of them. And nobody is better than him. Heyman said that every night Roman Reigns defends the position of being the greatest of all time on the island of relevancy, or that's what he does every night. What is it going to take for the Usos to be the greatest of all time? He called that, well, if they want to be the greatest of all time, they should just put on Spike shoulder pads and call themselves Hawk and Animal. He called them the direct descendants of the wild Samoans, and to take the mantle of the greatest, they would have to do something even Afa and Sika could not do, which is unify the tag team championships. He said that they would either beat RK-Bro or they would not come home at all. Roman took the microphone away from him and told the twins that they know what he wants. He expects them to deliver. He said the reason he has those expectations is because he loves them. And they shared a hug, and Roman smirked at the camera, which the Usos could not see. This was right out of the Hart Foundation reunion segment on Raw in 1997, when Brett called a truce between himself and Owen and Davey Boy, and they all hugged, and they got that great shot of Brett staring at the crowd. He had such a disdain for the American wrestling fans at that time. And he's got that devilish smirk on his face because he knows it's all self-serving. He needed strength in numbers. He needed to reunite with his family, not because he wanted to reunite with his family, but because he had to. He did so out of necessity, so now he had some allies on his side. It's very self-serving of him. And it's the same thing here with Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is... Roman Reigns is very manipulative. He is manipulating his family. So I loved it. I loved the little smirk there at the end. We had Shinsuke Nakamura taking on Sami Zayn. Nakamura passed by Reigns and the Usos as he was walking to the ring. They passed each other in the aisleway. So another little subtle nod there to what may end up being a television match at some point for the title between Roman and Shinsuke. These two had a really good match, and this is not even in the, this is not even in the probably middle tier of what these two are capable of doing together. I mean, I've seen better matches between these two. I saw their first match at TakeOver Dallas. This was nothing like that, but they still went out there. They had a very good match. After a commercial break, Nakamura hit a sliding German suplex in the ropes. He set up for the Kinshasa. Sami Zayn, though, jumped out of the ring. The Usos, JF in the chat says, the Usos of Doom. Oh, what a rush. Well, they're already using the Dudley Boys finish, so maybe they should just incorporate the shoulder pads. They can have a little bit of LOD, a little bit of the Dudley Boys. They can just steal little pieces of all these other teams and paint their tongues like Demolition used to do. So Sammy bailed out of the ring, which is what he's been doing a lot of lately. Nakamura went after him on the floor. Zayn caught him with a Michinoku driver on the floor and immediately just jumped right back into the ring. He was going to try to get another count-out win. He did this to Nakamura a few weeks ago. And he almost got away with it again, but this time Nakamura got back in just in the nick of time. So they end up brawling back out around ringside. Nakamura tosses Sammy over the barricade, and he rushes back into the ring. So he's, turnabout is fair play. He's doing to Sammy what Sammy has done to him. Now Sammy is in a race to try to get back into the ring in time, and he barely makes it back in before the count of 10. But as soon as he gets back inside, he gets met with a Kinshasa, and Nakamura gets the pin. Zayn, he tried to backdoor his way into another win. It did not work. That was the story they told here. This was good stuff. Crowd was into it. This was good stuff between these two. We then had a Happy Talk segment with Happy Corbin coming out and talking about the attack last week on Madcap Moss, where he wrapped the chair around his neck and he took the Andre the Giant trophy and he slammed it down on the chair. Corbin said that the people should learn from what happened to Moss and appreciate what they have. He told people that they should do everything that their boss says and never attempt to improve their station in life. There was a message being sent in this promo. Corbin said that Moss rode on private jets and ate fancy meals like Wagyu beef. Did it on his dime. And he didn't appreciate every great thing that he did for him. Moss thought Corbin would be the butt of his jokes and called him the big bald wolf. And he asked him, who's laughing now? And Corbin said, maybe he is the big bald wolf. That's a big bad wolf. Big bald wolf. So stupid. Because he huffed and he puffed and he put Moss in an ambulance. So he dropped the mic, he went outside the ring, and there was the Andre the Giant Memorial Budget Cuts Battle Royal Trophy, standing outside the ring. Corbin grabs the trophy. I was wondering how many weeks would go by before we got to this. Every week they put that trophy out there, you knew it was only a matter of time. He picked up the Andre trophy, he threw it against the ring steps, it smashed into a bunch of pieces, and he grabbed the little Andre the Giant figurine that was on top of the trophy. That was in the ring. That went untouched. He picked it up, brought it back into the ring, rather. He brought it back into the ring with him, and he held it up high. Little Andre, he held above his head. Michael Cole. And again, I don't want to go off too much on Michael Cole here, whether it was the stuff he said about Sasha and Naomi or what he said here in the segment, because he's just, he's reciting what is being fed to him in his ear. He's being a good little soldier, he's doing his job, and he's telling us what he's being told to say. But boy, they make this guy look and sound like a fucking moron. Michael Cole talked about how awful this was when he saw Corbin destroying the trophy. What an awful, terrible thing this was. Heinous thing. Michael Cole said the following words. He said, the Andre the Giant Battle Royal has jump-started so many careers in WWE. The Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal has jump-started zero careers in WWE. None. Not a single one. It was a big moment for Cesaro in 2014. That was great. That's still the best one they ever did. Where did it go? Nowhere. Because as Paul Heyman revealed many years later, they weren't trying to push Cesaro. They didn't give a shit. It was a nice one-night moment for him and nothing more. It didn't jumpstart anything. It didn't jumpstart it for him. It didn't jumpstart it for Big Show, who was already a fucking legend at that point. Braun Strowman, who had already challenged for world championships and did all this stuff and won tag team titles with little eight-year-old boys. Mojo Rawley. Oh, yeah, really jumpstarted his career. What a career he went on to have, huh? Here in WWE. Baron Corbin. Please. As if the Andre Battle Royal is what really jumpstarted his career. I had even forgotten that Jey Uso won the fucking thing. But Jey Uso already had a whole bunch of pay-per-view main events before then with Roman Reigns. The Andre Battle Royal is a joke. It has jump-started nothing. Maybe some people who were ready to go get up and go to the fridge and get a snack, it jump-started them to get off their fucking couch and go make a sandwich. That's about the only thing that it's ever jump-started. The words that come out of his mouth, like, I wonder if as he's saying this, because he has to know that it's such horse shit. He can't possibly even say it with a straight face. They didn't have the camera on him when he said it, but I find it impossible to believe that he said this with a straight face. Maybe today is opposite day. And you guys didn't tell me. I didn't look at the calendar. Maybe today is opposite day. Up is down, left is right. Maybe I just wasn't made aware of this. But you didn't have to read between the lines with some of the verbiage here to know who part of this promo was directed towards. When you've got Baron Corbin out here, you know, especially this week, talking about, you know, making comments about obeying your boss and doing what you're told. Yeah, it's very convenient that that would be scripted into this promo this week of all weeks. I am still hopeful that when Moss does come back, he will get a complete, and when I say complete, I'm talking head to toe, including the fucking name. He'll have a complete makeover. Because he's a talented guy, he's a good athlete. There could be something there. Not as Madcap Moss. So use this time away to bring him back with a fresh coat of paint. And a new name. Yeah, all these people they're giving new names to. And wait until I get to the latest one. They give new names to people like, I mean, please, like the DMV gives out fucking driver's licenses. But Madcap Moss, they're going to hold on to this one? Total makeover. is what this man needs. Marcel Barthel introduced Walter for yet another match with Drew Gulak. They played dramatic music behind Bartel's introduction of Walter, which I don't think they've done before. I thought it worked nicely. I actually really liked this and thought that it felt like an epic intro as he was introducing Walter. I thought this was great, and I hope that sticks. I hope that stays. The match itself was anything but epic. It was a squash, which is exactly what it should have been. He rocked Gulak with hard chops. He hit a power bomb and pinned him. After the match, Walter put him in a Boston Crab until Ricochet comes running down to the ring. The Intercontinental Champion runs down to the ring to make the save, and Walter, he doesn't run away. He takes his time, and he takes his leave, and he and Marcel Barthel leave the ring. And Ricochet saves the day for Drew Gulak, which means that we're probably going to be getting Barthel in the ring finally, because this has to set up a tag team match, I would imagine. Walter and Barthel, Gunther and Ludwig, call them whatever you want, against Ricochet and Drew Gulak. But more importantly, the fact that Gunther and Ricochet are involved in a program now tells me that we're going to get a new Intercontinental Champion very soon, and it cannot come soon enough. Walter is going to win the Intercontinental Championship. He is going to chop Ricochet right into the next dimension, and he is going to try to restore some level of actual prestige to the Intercontinental title. I know it's probably a fool's errand. We go through this every few years. The idea that the Intercontinental title has any prestige anymore, it's like talking about the women's tag team titles. But I will always have a soft spot for the Intercontinental title. I grew up with it. It used to be something held in high regard. It can be that again. Walter is the man who can restore it to some semblance of glory. So that I'm excited for. I'm excited to put the two of them together and get that championship on him very soon. Adam Pearce was in the back. Yes, chop him into the shadow realm. Rest in peace, Ricochet. Adam Pearce was in the back when he was interrupted by LA Knight. LA Knight making his SmackDown debut here tonight. But he is no longer L.A. Knight. Oh, no. L.A. Knight has a new name. Nobody is safe. L.A. Knight has a new name. L.A. Knight is now going by the name Max Dupree. D-U-P-R-I. And he says it in a very particular way. It's Max Dupree. That's going to be his thing now going forward. Max Dupree. That's his new name. So he's not a wrestler anymore. They took that away from him, at least for now. He's going to be a manager. He's going to be an agent or whatever they're going to call him. So they took him out of the ring, and they took his name away from him. I see. Called himself the CEO of the hottest new male modeling agency, which he's calling Maximum Male Models. MMM. I don't know if that's better or worse than Moo. Mountain of Omnipotence. Moo. Moo. Ooh. Oh. Moo. Let's get Vic Joseph calling this. He said that he's going to have an agency filled with superstars that can headline Fashion Week in Paris, and WrestleMania. And Adam Pearce was very confused because he didn't invite him to the show tonight, but Dupree told him that, in fact, he was invited by Sonya Deville, WWE official. WWE official Sonya Deville. What's going on, Lonnie? Lonnie Jones in the chat. Pearce said that this is awkward, and he informed him that Sonya was relieved of her executive duties recently. She is no longer a WWE official. She has no power. Dupree said that he has a signed contract, though, and Pierce said, well, I'll have to have my legal team look into this. And then they ended the segment with Dupree trying to teach Pierce the proper way to pronounce his last name. Yet another completely unnecessary name change in this company. But look at it this way. It could be worse. He could be Butch. Glass half empty, glass half full. Trying to look at it in a positive way. It could always be worse. LA Knight can make this work. He's charismatic enough. He can make this work. So they're going to have him managing other people, at least at first. It's not like he's never going to wrestle, but they're introducing him as a manager. And I know some people are going to say, well, they did this with Roddy Piper, right? You can find examples of them doing this before. Managers sometimes turn into wrestlers. That was a completely different situation, though, because the only reason Piper couldn't wrestle is because he was still injured after the dog collar match he had at Starrcade with Greg Valentine. So they had him. He couldn't work in the ring, so they put him to good use in another way. They put him to good use with his mouth. And when he was all healed up, he started wrestling. This is a little bit different. LA Knight is not injured. LA Knight is fine physically. He's ready to go. And who knows how many more really good years he'll have left in him, because he's already, 39 years old, on the cusp of 40, which is like a really bad red number in this company, even though the majority of their fucking main event scene are in their 40s. He's perfectly healthy. They have chosen to utilize him in this way. He can make this work. He's got the ability, I believe, to do that. In these dark matches and these dark segments that they've been doing, testing this new gimmick out over the last several weeks, he's introduced two men as his clients, one being Mace, the former Dio Madden, Mace of Retribution, and the other being Mansoor. So we'll have to wait and see if they're going to keep those two as his clients and then reintroduce them on TV, or they may completely change and give him two totally different people. But in the dark matches, it's been Mace and Mansoor, so we'll have to wait and see. I guess, look, they're probably hoping, because he's got more charisma than both of them put together, and they're probably hoping that he can give them some of that rub. Maybe he can. I would not be using him to get other people over as much as I would be using him because they need people like him on SmackDown. He would be a person that you can plug in on SmackDown, in a program right now. And you could use him as a babyface. You could use him as a heel. He's a natural heel. And you could build him up as a major player on SmackDown. We can use some more of those. That's my biggest issue with this. It's not like, AEW has the opposite problem. The problem right now that Tony Khan has is he has so many people. He has so much talent that he doesn't have space for all of them. So a lot of the big names that he has signed, they barely get any television time. He's got the opposite problem. On SmackDown right now, they don't have enough stars. That's why we keep seeing the same ones over and over and over and over again. You drop an LA Knight in there on SmackDown, this guy can make you money. This guy could start making you money now. And then over time, if you want to have him, pair off with people and form some kind of a faction and try to give people the rub that way, you could do that, but instead they're introducing him in a totally different way that makes no sense, because they could use someone like him in the ring as a star himself. Instead, they're going to have him try to get fucking Mansoor over as a major star on the main roster. It's never going to work. They tried to push Mansoor before, and then they just cut him off. They stopped featuring him. Mansoor is actually pretty good. He got a little push, and like so many other people, they got bored and they stopped. They don't even dust him off for all the Saudi Arabia shows anymore. At least he had that going for him. Now he doesn't even have that. I mean, LA Knight, I think he could try to make this work, but he doesn't control the booking. Even he's not a miracle worker. He can only do so much. The company has to really invest in whoever they put with him and believe in them. And they don't have a very good track record of that. So if they start this and then 6 weeks or 2 months, 3 months from now, they give up on Mansoor, Mace, whoever it is that they put with him, where does that leave him? Where does that leave LA Knight? Is he out of luck? Or do they just abandon this whole idea and they just use him? That's my other fear. Whoever they put him with, if they fail, if that flops, if it doesn't work, what happens to him? We've seen people come in and get their legs cut off without ever really getting a chance. I would really love to know. I would really love to know what was wrong with LA Knight, the name LA Knight. That wasn't even the greatest name when they first gave it to him. I wasn't sold on it. It grew on me like mold over time. You know, and he would do that thing where he would point at the crowd and go, LA Knight. And when he became a babyface, everybody was into it and they would chant, LA Knight. And so he made it work. That was a name they gave him. He was Eli Drake in Impact Wrestling. And I think he could have been Eli Drake in NXT if they wanted him to be. Because I think many years ago, they put that policy in place where people could take their gimmick, they could take their name with them from Impact, like Abyss. I mean, he's working as an agent behind the scenes or a producer, but you know, if they wanted to give him a cameo in the Royal Rumble, and I still can't imagine why they didn't. You know, 1 year you throw him in there, the Monster Abyss, he'll get, you know, a little pop from the people who know him, and you know, he could say, I was in a Royal Rumble, you know. I'm not saying give him a big fucking, you know, push or anything. But if he wanted to be Abyss, I think technically, legally, he could be Abyss. EC3 was able to come back to WWE as EC3. So if they wanted him to be Eli Drake, he could have been. They said, no, we're going to give you a name. And they gave him the name LA Knight. Now they're changing their own names that they're giving people. I kind of understand, you know, if they have a name from the independents or another company, you want to change it and start fresh and do your own thing. Now they're changing. They're actively changing names that they themselves have given these people. It's just, it's so absurd to me. It is just change for the sake of change. All it is. It is change for the sake of change. We had Raquel Rodriguez against Shotzi Blackheart. This is coming off Raquel's loss to Ronda Rousey. They had that open challenge and Raquel took her to the limit and Ronda just eked out a win. I thought Raquel came out of that looking very strong, even in defeat. The push continues here on this show. Her and Shotzi had not a great match. Shotzi is not the smoothest person to watch in the ring, but Raquel did the best that she could with it. I mean, they just didn't work all that well together, I don't think, but they showed Los Lotharios and Xia Li. Yes, Xia Li, believe it or not, is still employed. They showed her and Natty and a bunch of people standing around in the back watching the match, trying to make it like, okay, it's a real like event to watch this woman work. And then in the end, she won with her Chingona Bomb finish. So they're really putting Raquel over strong, which is good. Because with Sasha walking out, I have a feeling they're going to have to go back to Ronda and Raquel a lot sooner than they had intended to. I don't know that they're going to have a choice. So very important to make her look dominant, keep her looking strong. So far, so good. I could do without all the smiling and stuff, but she's a baby face, and that's what baby faces do. They smile. But so far, I think they've done a good job of making her look dominant on TV. We had Xavier Woods against Butch. No, you didn't click on the wrong review. This is not the review from 2 or 3 weeks ago. This is a brand new episode of SmackDown. You know, Billy Joel once said in one of his songs that it burns on and on and on and on and on. So yet again, we have Xavier Woods against Butch. They're just they're spinning their wheels at this point with this thing. Woods rocked Butch with a kick, went for the DDT off the middle rope, that little springboard DDT that he does. Butch, though, caught him coming off the ropes with a stiff forearm. Woods, though, was able to catch Butch with the backwoods cradle, and he picked up the win just the way he beat Butch the first time. He beat Butch the first time with the backwoods, and he did it again here. After the match, Butch disappeared into the crowd. As Woods was walking to the back, here comes Sheamus, here comes Ridge Holland, who were not out at ringside with him. They stayed in the back, but now they came out. And Woods is out number 2-1. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, comes Butch back out of the crowd. He attacks Woods and blindsides him, and they beat him down. Later on in the back, Woods was not very happy. Very upset. Once again, the numbers game. He was overwhelmed, and he said that next week Kofi Kingston is going to be back, and they have somebody in mind for a partner, so we're going to get a six-man tag. They have somebody in mind for a partner, and Sheamus and Holland and Butch are not going to be very happy when they see who it is. Question is now, who is this third man going to be? Who's the third man? Maybe it's Mabel. Although I guess that would be impossible. My guess, Drew McIntyre. McIntyre, like I said, he was not on the show tonight. He's doing promotional work over in the UK. They did say that he will be back on the show next week. And it's pretty clear they're going to hold out as long as they possibly can on doing anything else between Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre. So what else is Drew really doing? He kind of has no real direction right now. Obviously, he has a history with Sheamus. So my guess is it's going to be Drew McIntyre. However, I will throw out a bit of a wild card pick. I think it's going to be Drew. If it's not Drew, I think it could be Cesaro. We're still waiting to find out what Cesaro is going to do. Not aware of there being any ill will between him and WWE. It was just a case where his contract expired. They were negotiating for a new contract. They thought that he would sign. Obviously, they weren't willing to give him the money that he was looking for. They couldn't agree to terms, and so they parted ways. And he's been a free man ever since, because when your contract expires, there's no non-compete. You can pretty much go do whatever you want. And he's been teasing things on social media and saying that he's going to be making a move very soon. Wouldn't shock me at all to see him, you know, come to terms with the company and go back to WWE. He spent so many years there. I really think that if I'm Tony Khan, I'm going to do everything I can to make a play, because he's somebody who could be really useful with this Ring of Honor relaunch. He can make appearances on AEW television, but he's going to need a core group of guys at the top of the card in Ring of Honor that he can really build around and push and maybe put the title on. And Cesaro could be that guy. He could be one of those guys. And I think just to see him outside the WWE bubble after so many years in it would be a lot of fun. But if he goes back to WWE, then, I can't fault the guy if he gets the deal that he's looking for. I don't see him going anywhere else. I don't see him landing in Impact. I don't see him, flying over to Japan and, wrestling on New Japan Strong. I think it's going to be one or the other. And it could very well be that he goes back. Yeah, he goes back to WWE if they give him what he wants. It's not like they can't use somebody like him on SmackDown. Like I said, they have a real depth issue on that roster. But my first pick, my first guess is that it will be Drew McIntyre. I saw some people saying, is it going to be Big E? Is this going to be Big E's return? No, it's not going to be Big E. I wish it was. Because the last update on his neck and the whole C1 fracture was not good. So I wish it was, but no, it's not going to be Big E. This was the point in the show before the main event where Michael Cole, again, he addressed the Sasha Banks and Naomi situation. And in case you missed it, if you're tuning in late to the stream here, if you're coming over from another stream, they made the announcement on the show tonight. They had Michael Cole make the announcement on the show tonight, that Sasha and Naomi have been indefinitely suspended as a result of their actions on Raw Monday night, walking out of the building and not participating in the six-pack challenge main event that they were advertised for. Michael Cole used language here in this segment like, Sasha and Naomi, they let us all down. They let us all down. Everybody was very disappointed in their actions and in their behavior on Monday night. And he announced that they were suspended and that the women's tag team titles will be decided upon in a tournament at some point in the future. And as I said earlier, why bother? Why bother? WWE has never, will never give a single solitary shit about the women's tag team titles. Why is this going to be any different? I mean, just drop the facade. Stop pretending like you care. And if you're not going to, come up with ways to actually feature them in a meaningful way and or put together a division and make it feel special and, make it fun where the champions, it's not just a Raw and SmackDown thing. They could appear in NXT. Maybe they go toe-to-toe with the NXT Tag Team Champions. Here's an idea. to piggyback off what I suggested at the beginning of the stream when I said just put the fucking titles on Toxic Attraction and let them float around. Got a very easy way to do this. Whoever wins the tag team paperweights in this tournament, doesn't even matter who it is. Doesn't even matter who it is. Watch them bring back the fucking Bella Twins, by the way. Don't think that I wasn't thinking about that as I was watching this tonight. You watch the Bella Twins end up in that tournament. The Bella Twins are going to end up with those women's tag team titles at some point. You can mark my words on that. I don't know if it'll be in this tournament, but Nikki and Brie will be the women's tag team champions at some point. Whoever you put those belts on, let them enjoy them for a little bit. And send them on to NXT. WWE's in unification mode, baby, right? They've unified the two top titles. Now they've unified their men's tag team titles. Go ahead and unify the women's tag team titles and put the gold on Toxic Attraction and let them just float around from show to show. Because maybe then WWE will actually do something with those belts because they love Toxic Attraction. If you watch NXT 2.0 every week, they can't get enough of Toxic Attraction and showing them in their skimpy outfits and showing them on the beach half naked and all this stuff. Oh, they love Toxic Attraction. That might be the only way to get Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard and John Laurinaitis to actually, oh, well, you know, we should be doing more with the women's tag team titles. We can't take our eyes off these women. Right? Sex sells. That might be the only way to get their attention and get them to focus on these things. Unify the titles there. Put them on Toxic Attraction. Otherwise, just get rid of them. They serve no purpose. They're a decorative piece. Put them in the warehouse. Every year at WrestleMania, when you do fan access, you could trot them out. You could put them on display with all the other old belts. This is when, and then little Timmy can go with Daddy to fucking fan access. And 10 years from now, Timmy's going to go, Dad, what's that? And Dad's going to go, well, son, those are the women's tag team titles. You know, there was a period of time where the women had their own tag team titles. And then the little Timmy can ask his father, well, how come they don't have them anymore? And he could say, well, son, because Vince McMahon doesn't give a flying fuck about these tag team titles. I will have a lot more to say about Sasha and Naomi on the podcast on Sunday. But let me just say, I was not one of those people who felt let down by what happened on Monday night. In fact, I applaud them for what they did. And I'll explain why. But there is more than meets the eye to this whole story when it comes to their contracts potentially being up very soon. This is more than just a minor creative issue that they had with Vince McMahon and the company. So then it was time for the winner-take-all unification match for the Raw and SmackDown Tag Team Championships. RK-Bro defending their Raw Tag Team titles against the Usos, putting their SmackDown Tag Team titles on the line, the gold. Well, no, they're both silver. And you know what I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of the bronze. They used to have those bronze belts, the penny belts. But I guess they're all silver now, right? It's the red and silver and the blue and silver. So we got the silver belts. Paul Heyman sat in on commentary, which I thought could have been really cool, right? A little call back there to Paul Heyman back when he used to do commentary. He didn't really have much to say in this match. Riddle got sent into the turnbuckles early on in the match, and he was selling an injury. And the trainer got into the ring to check on him. And for a split second, I thought, okay, maybe he really, you know, did get hurt here. But very conveniently, it was right before the final commercial break. So they came back, and of course, Riddle was already, you know, he was still in the ring and he was making a comeback. And they diagnosed the injury, though, and they came back as a bruised hip. And I just thought to myself, boy, that's a really quick diagnosis, this crack WWE medical staff. They diagnosed in the middle of a match. Guy's still in the ring. They've already, you know, they've diagnosed the injury. It's not like an obvious thing, like a broken arm or a broken ankle or a broken neck. And they were able to diagnose exactly what the injury was. It's too bad, you know, they couldn't diagnose the staph infection for CM Punk all those years ago. Let's take a Z-Pack. So the Usos worked over Riddle some more coming out of the break. Orton eventually got the hot tag. People were just waiting. They were waiting for Randy Orton to tag into this match. He finally did. They ran wild. He hit the draping DDT. Hit Jimmy Uso with an RKO, went for the pin, but Jay broke it up. Riddle tagged himself back in, which seemed very unwise, given that he was hurt. And Orton was in the ring for maybe all of 90 seconds, so not exactly sure why Riddle would almost immediately tag himself back into the match. That doesn't seem very smart. Jay caught him with a pop-up neck breaker, got a near fall out of it. Jay Uso went up to the top. Riddle, though, followed him. He caught him up there, and he was setting up for a super RKO off the top. Paul Heyman, at this point, gets off headset. He runs over, and he distracts the referee. While the referee is distracted, Roman Reigns appears. As I predicted last week, I said Roman Reigns is going to get involved in this match. I thought he would get involved and there would be a disqualification. The referee did not see him get involved. He was holding Riddle, so Riddle, you know, he's holding him, so he couldn't go anywhere. Riddle ended up getting knocked down to the mat. Referee didn't see any of this. And Jey Uso hits the Uso splash, and he gets the pin to unify the Raw and SmackDown tag team titles. The Usos are the unified WWE World Tag Team Champions. Roman Reigns attacks Riddle after the match. The Usos attacked Randy Orton with the ring steps on the outside. Reigns then locked on the guillotine choke on Riddle until he was mostly out. Then they laid Riddle on the announce desk. And Jey Uso climbed all the way up to the top rope. And Jey Uso, now we've seen people do these spots before. We've seen Shane McMahon do the giant flying elbow off the top. And it always looks impressive because you've got to go, you've got to get distance on that. This looked very dangerous because it wasn't, you know, a guarantee that Jey Uso was going to be able to get the distance that he needed. It looked like he barely got it. And it looked like a rough landing, but he did land with the Uso splash on Riddle on the announce desk, and the desk collapsed and they fell down in a heap. Reigns locked Orton in the guillotine. He put him out. Speaking of which, there's Randy Orton on your screen right now, pointing to Baby Russo on a pole. Thank you, Derek Kane, for the $10 Russo on a pole. They showed little kids in the crowd crying. RK-Bro! All the little kids were crying. They were finding kids. They did this back in the day when there would be like a really big angle they would shoot on the syndicated shows. When Jake the Snake, when the snake bit Macho Man on the arm. I remember that one kid in particular. He had like this spiked haircut. They zoomed in and his face was all scrunched up. He was in tears. Ah, it was great. So they showed all the little brats in the crowd. They were crying their eyes out. All the little RK-Bro fans. And the Bloodline posed with all the titles in the ring to close out the show. I will give them credit. I did not think that they would do it tonight. I thought if they're going to go through with the unification, it's going to happen at the pay-per-view. They'll have some kind of a fluky finish tonight. It'll build to a rematch, maybe in the cell, to keep out Roman Reigns and keep out anybody from interfering. And then the Usos will unify the tag team titles. I don't think there was any debate about which one of these teams was going to win. Especially with all the wins that Riddle has been getting on TV over the Usos on an individual basis, it was pretty clear who was going to walk out with the gold. They wanted the Bloodline. They wanted that shot, that golden shot, that money shot of all of them posing with the titles. And now they haven't. The only person missing a title is Paul Heyman. And you know what? You may as well put the 24-7 title on him. Let's get every member of the Bloodline with belts, right? The 24-7 championship would mean a lot more on Paul Heyman than it would on fucking Tozawa or Reggie or Dana or any of the other, or Tamina or any of the other people they have running around like circus clowns on that show. Roman will have his two belts, the Usos will have their two belts each, and Paul Heyman can have his own belt. Then the Bloodline will truly have all of the gold. So I will give them credit for giving us an actual finish on this show. Wasn't clean, but they did give us a finish, which I did not think we were going to get. And I honestly, I mean, camera work aside, because again, it's fucking nauseating with all the camera cuts, but it was a hot beatdown angle at the end of the show. It kind of reminded me of some of those types of show-closing beatdowns we used to get back in the day. Dare I say, even some of those old Nitro episodes where it was just pure chaos at the end of the show and the NWO was just beating everybody down. That's kind of what this reminded me of a little bit. And it got a lot of heat from the crowd. Again, with the kids crying and they zoomed in on people just kind of shaking their heads. They were so disappointed by what they were seeing. That was the whole point. That was the whole point, to show that the bloodline is dominant and nobody can stop these guys. And now, you know, Riddle and Orton make sense as far as having a rematch, because they can say, well, Roman Reigns got involved. We deserve a rematch. I expect that there'll be a rematch at Hell in a Cell. And the Usos will hold on to the titles. They're not going to flip them back. Riddle and Orton now could be singles challengers for Roman Reigns over these next couple of months. I've pitched Randy Orton against Roman Reigns. I pitched that for Hell in a Cell until I found out that Roman wasn't going to be on Hell in a Cell. So then I figured, well, you can do that at Money in the Bank. Most likely, we're going to get singles matches with Riddle and Orton challenging Randy Orton for the championship. Riddle supposedly is in line for a match with Roman Reigns in the main event at Money in the Bank at Allegiant Stadium. A few weeks later, that same month, there's two pay-per-views in July. SummerSlam is in July for the first time, July 30th in Nashville. It's another stadium show. Randy Orton will probably be challenging Roman Reigns for the championship. So now all of a sudden, you've taken care of your next two challengers and put some distance between Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre long enough to get you to the Clash at the Castle in September in Cardiff, and then you can do Roman Reigns against Drew McIntyre on that show. So it seems like they probably have their next three or four challengers set up for Roman Reigns, because you could always do the television match if you want with Reigns and Nakamura. If the next title defense on pay-per-view for Roman Reigns is July 2nd and Money in the Bank, again, this is the second tease that we've had of possibly them doing something with Nakamura and Reigns when they pass by each other in the aisleway tonight. My money would be on them doing a television match between Reigns and Nakamura in June. Because Roman's not going to be on the pay-per-view in June. But some random week on SmackDown, they could easily do a championship match on TV between Reigns and Nakamura. Which is what I assume, you know, that he beat Sami Zayn tonight. They're building him for something. And it's likely going to be a match with Roman Reigns. So I didn't think SmackDown was as terrible as it's been on some of the recent episodes. There was enough going on tonight between them giving us a finish in the main event, the hot angle to close out the show, still pushing Raquel hard, which they need to do to build her up as a future challenger for Ronda Rousey. So again, there were some good things to point to on this show outside of the. Again, some of the ridiculous stuff that came out of Michael Cole's mouth here tonight. Let's check out the Twitter polls and see where you guys stand on this SmackDown show. You don't seem very impressed. 38% thumbs up, 23% thumbs in the middle, and almost 40% of you have given this SmackDown show a thumbs down. And as far as Rampage, about 61% thumbs up, 22% thumbs in the middle, and 16% thumbs down. Again, you can vote in these polls whenever you would like to. At Solomonster on Twitter is the place to go for that. Before we get into your questions, and I know you guys have a lot to say about this and Sasha stuff and everything, and we're going to get into it here in a second, but I do want to just remind all of you that there is a brand new video Q&A for all channel members. Members only Q&A here on the channel. Part one went up yesterday. A 40-minute Q&A video answering your questions. So you know, part two, which is even longer than part one, is going to be going up on Sunday evening. So sometime Sunday night, you are a channel member here on YouTube. And if you do, you guys, you'll see your name highlighted in green in the chat. You all have a badge next to your name. That means you are a channel member. Part two, almost 50 minutes answering your questions, is going to be going up on Sunday. So keep an eye out for that. And also don't forget the latest edition of Sound Off Gamer, My Rise, Episode 5. The WCW reunion gone horribly, horribly wrong. Oh, poor Kevin Nash. Look at poor Kevin Nash. That went up earlier in the week as well, so if you like the gamer content, you guys are in luck. Got a lot of great content here on the channel for you this week. There you go, Groovy Goose. He's posting all of the emotes. I think Groovy Goose just discovered the channel member emotes in the chat. He sees, I see the Solemn Monster head. All right, let's get into it here. Let's get into your questions and comments. Again, you can drop a super chat if you would like. It is open to everybody. Should work on mobile as well as desktop. If you want to support the channel and drop a message, Naif Alsafar, thank you for your double super chat hit. Naif coming in here at number one. Food Hive, also with a double hit. Mavs game tonight. Love you guys. See you on Wednesday. And then he says, new name for you, Thirsty Solemn Monster from Sound of Gamer. Leave Mandy Rose alone. She looks damn good in the game. Joseph Brooks with the $4.99. World and tag team titles are unified finally. Hope this means we get new belts, but I know that is not going to happen. No, it's not going to happen. Jay Baker with the $4.99. That SmackDown ending beatdown had the kids in the audience shook. I couldn't help but laugh. Same as you did with Taker and Brock. Also, Double or Nothing is stacked. I do love it when they show the kids and they're so just shocked and appalled and saddened by what they're seeing. Because, you know, it takes me back, you know, when I was younger and when it's just a different time in wrestling and the babyface would get beaten down and, you know, if it was... It didn't have to be some kind of complicated angle. It could be Earthquake sitting on Hulk Hogan, you know, sitting on his chest on the Brother Love show or something. And all the little kids in the crowd, it's like their world was just collapsing around them. It was like, you know, when you believe, when you're that age, you still believe. I miss those days. Ghostros, I applaud Sasha and Naomi for walking out. Mr. All Day J with the $5 Super Chat. I dig the Usos champions, and this sets up two Roman opponents. And for the record, Sasha and Naomi did not let me down. Creative screwed creative. I applaud anybody who is willing to stand up to bad creative. And frankly, I think we need more people with a fucking spine in that company. All the people attacking them, oh, what do they care? It's just, who cares? It's women's tag team titles. What are they making a big deal for? That's the point. That is the prevailing attitude. Who cares? What's the big deal? That's why we're in the rut that we're in. That's why WWE has no incentive to change because of that attitude. Who cares? What's the difference? It's not a big deal. So you get shit. Iru, congratulations, WWE. You've continued to misuse Shotzi, Pete Dunne, and now LA Knight. So glad I stopped watching Raw and SmackDown 8 years ago. F off, WWE. So I'm seeing in the chat, people talking about the Mavs. I have no idea what happened with the Mavs. Said, as someone from Dallas, hearing about the Mavs just feels bad. What happened with the Mavs? Did I miss something? Dry chicken without flavor. This whole Sasha Banks and Naomi news is getting real nasty. WWE propaganda machine is ridiculous. They are setting the bar very low. Cody James, I was at SmackDown. How were we as a crowd? Good finish. Good crowd. I thought the crowd was actually pretty good. But again, with WWE, it's so hard to tell what's real and what's not. It sounded like a good crowd for parts of the show. They were completely dead during the Corbin segment, but it's fucking Happy Corbin. I wouldn't expect anything else. Vitamin Vision TV. The real women's revolution. Ah, so the Mavs choked. Blew a 19-point lead. I'm a Mets fan, so I know all about the big choke. I feel for you. Dry chicken without flavor in 2023. Due to AEW's stacked roster, I believe it's finally time for Double or Nothing to have a two-night event. No. No, they do not. Anti-M-Bishop 07. Evening, Solomon. Thank you for the $15, brother. Evening Sala Monster, screw the women's tag team titles, and I stand with Sasha and Naomi. This BS takes from the BS takes from pro work people made me sick. And still shocked at the TNT belt on Rampage. Smash that like button. KD with a $10 super chat. What WWE did today was very petty. But if you were going to say that, you have to also say that what Tony Khan did to Big Swole was as petty or even worse, since he called her a bad wrestler. I agree. And I think you need to go back and listen to what I said at the time. I don't disagree. I called him out for that very thing. Loki Agatha, thank you for the $15, brother. I appreciate that. Rizzo with the $20 spot. Don't blame WWE for suspending Sasha and Naomi. I said the same thing when Tony Storm and Punk walked out. You can't walk out of a job if you aren't happy and expect not to be disciplined. Just my two cents. Have a good night. There's a difference between being disciplined and just being overly petty, you know, on the air about it. And in the statement and stuff. You could argue that, you know, WWE has every right to suspend them. That's not the issue that I have. We're talking about two different things. Shin Akuma, thank you for the two spot. And Shin with another $2 super chat. Shout out to Solomonster and all in the chat. Well, shout out to Shin Akuma. Dry chicken without flavor. Swerve Scott for AEW TNT champion, please. Let's do it. Be a hell of a lot better than what they're giving us now. Rizzo, thank you for the great content tonight to keep my mind off my Tigers losing yet another pitcher due to injury. We have now lost all five of our starting pitchers. Sports suck. Yeah, I mean, it's not as bad with the Mets. We didn't lose five, but two of the best pitchers in the entire league, you know, Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer, and we are without both of them. So I kind of know how that feels. Derek Fleming, love the Globe title on the wall, my era's title. Drew, with the double super chat. Does Sasha return at SummerSlam as a surprise challenger to either title? No, and I think it's a question at all about whether or not she is going to even be back, let alone at SummerSlam. Anti-M Bishop, by the way, Solomonster is putting a foot in AEW and WWE's butts tonight with these reviews. And yes, the MGMT Sublims were Hot 97 Summer Jam worthy. All right. We've got Lakers Pats 1. Sasha should go to Japan, and Rick is wrestling again. Well, Sasha, remember, Sasha went to Japan to train with Mako Satomura, if you remember, who is now the NXT UK Women's Champion. The last time Sasha took a sabbatical, and she talked about that, you know, she was going through a bout of depression, and this was 3 years ago. And she went over to Japan. She just dropped everything and said, I need to come train with you. And she went over to Japan to train with Mako Satomura. She's always wanted to wrestle in Japan. She may end up getting her wish. You imagine Sasha Banks in Stardom? Boots says hello. Hello, Boots. Dan with a $3 super chat. If the belts are split, AJ should win before Cody. No, I think Cody will beat AJ to the belt. EJ Slemp, are you surprised Team Taz has not added a female member? If they did, which woman do you think it would be? No, I'm not really surprised. You know, not every faction is going to have a female member. I don't know. Offhand, I don't know. There's no woman on the roster that jumps out at me as, oh, that woman has to be part of Team Taz. I look at the Blackpool Combat Club. I think someone like Serena Deeb would be a good fit. I think Layla Hirsch, who's injured right now, I think she would be a good fit. But it's not necessary. It's not needed. We've got Derek Fleming Jr. $1.99. What is a Max Dupree? That's what I'm wondering. We're going to find out what a Max Dupree is. It's not Max Dupree. It's Max Dupree. DHV Smoking Trees. Also, Roman should turn and lose to Badass Walter. Yeah, it's too early for that. You got to establish Walter first. Derek Kane, $10 Super Chat. What is your opinion on why the House of Black storyline is painfully slow? I've been wondering the same thing, brother. I think they just have so much going on that, you know, this is what they have for them. And, you know, it's just very limited in terms of the number of segments that they have available. I still, you know, think that Malachi Black should be doing more even as a single. You know, he could lead the House of Black still, but he should also be, I think, more engaged on a singles level and not just doing tags. And I'm very disappointed. Very disappointed in how little that we've actually seen him featured on TV. It really does. Matt, you know, Mr. Dynamite said in the chat, it really does feel like the House of Black. I like that analogy or that reference. It's like they're in purgatory. It's kind of like they're stuck in purgatory. Red Emissary of Darkness, I actually have a question to ponder. Am I the only one who gets burned out from long title reigns, no matter who is holding the title? No, I feel you. I mean, there was a period of time where they were hot-shotting those titles. I mean, they were playing hot potato with the top titles so many times that you didn't have somebody holding the championship for a year or a year and a half or 2 years. And in recent years, it's all about, they love telling you how many days people have been champion for. 200 days, 500 days, 700 days. You know, Walter had a really long run with the UK title. I think Pete Dunne did too, but Walter had that long run. We've had the Usos now 300 days as champions. Roman is at 629 days, I think they said, as the champion. And I think also, was it the NXT UK women's title? I think Kaylee Ray had the belt for something like 500 or 600 days. I mean, it was Walter, I think, had the NXT UK title for like 800 days. So I think if you want to have that kind of dominant champion, I think that's fine. But if everybody now is going to have long reigns, then yeah, it gets boring. And I don't know, it doesn't feel as special. So I agree. I think they maybe have been going overboard with it. Ricky Edmond says Superstar of the Year in 2004 and 2005 in WWE. I don't know. You're asking me to go back in time now and think of what the rosters were at that point. You know, 2005 in WWE, Superstar of the Year. You probably would have to go with Batista. 2004? I don't know. You know, 2004... You could certainly make a case, I think, for Chris Benoit. Maybe Randy Orton. I don't know. I don't know what I would go with, though. Lamar Smith, $9.99. Why do people think it's okay to just walk out on contractual obligations? Not saying WWE is right. But that is a dangerous thing to be doing without probable cause and not liking creative. Well, again, you don't know the full story. Nobody really knows the full story. I said at the beginning, there's more here than just, oh, we didn't like this one storyline. This feels like something that was building for a while. But the reality is this. We can get into this whole thing about contracts and stuff. We could also talk about this whole label of independent contractors. And if WWE is going to classify their talent as independent contractors, you know, we could open up that whole can of worms too. If somebody is unhappy, should they be bound to do something that they don't feel comfortable doing or that they disagree with by the letter of the contract? The answer is probably yes, but we can get into the whole way they even classify talent if you want to go down that road. We don't know the full story, but I look at this and I say that, again, if Sasha and Naomi had some kind of a creative issue or if they felt that, you know, promises were made to them or something when they were first told that they were being put into a tag team, whatever it might be, if they were trying to address their issues behind the scenes in a professional way and they kept being shut out, or if they had producers in the back telling them to, you know, check your attitude and don't talk back or, you know, things of that nature. You know, I'm not so sure I wouldn't have done the same thing. It's not a simple, it's not a simple thing. There's a lot of moving parts here in this story. And I will get into all of it on episode 757 on Sunday. Darth Panic, what's your thoughts on Stephanie taking time off? Do you think there is more to it than what is being reported? I don't. I mean, when you say more to it, I don't think there's any kind of a big controversial thing going on. I hope there's nothing health-wise going on as far as her family, personally, outside of Triple H. So I can't say for sure that there isn't something like that going on, but as far as something really, you know, controversial, no, I don't believe so. Ricky Edmond, thank you, brother, for the $5 super chat. I just talked about that a moment ago. Dry Chicken gave me an El Fantasmo, Yujiro Takahashi, Mark Quinn, and Isaiah Cassidy 8-man tag team entrance to promote Forbidden Door on a Dynamite. I don't think you're going to get that, but that's kind of random, actually. Temjin Zephyr, favorite Biggie Smalls song. Oh my goodness. Oh, I don't know. I gotta think about that. Kelton Young, you have two songs playing at once in the back. I think I kind of caught that before. Actually, I'll turn that one off now. Yeah, I caught that a couple of minutes ago. Oh, let's see here. We got Rizzo, $20 super chat. Yeah. You know, Omondo, that's a great point. I had actually forgotten about that after WrestleMania back in 2018. And they caught that on camera, too, when Brock Lesnar came to the back after he beat Roman Reigns in that horrible main event. Literally threw the title at Vince McMahon. Took his championship and chucked it at 70-something-year-old Vince McMahon. Who then turned around and called him an asshole as Brock walked away. I didn't hear too many people going off on how unprofessional Brock was when he did that. Paul Heyman, I'm still having trust issues that WWE acknowledge wrestling as fake. Would better help with the discount code SOLOMONSTER be of use for me at this moment? Well, it's not a discount code. Better help absolutely can be of help to you, and you can get 10% off your first month when you use our link. BetterHelp.com/SOLOMONSTER. Paul Heyman, I think you should take that offer, and let me know how that goes for you. Chris Manson, been inactive on the streams. Work has been brutal, but I gotta say thank you for uploading old Sound Off episodes on Spotify. There are older ones on Spotify. Of course, the original ones, those are reserved for channel members only on the Legends tier. We have the first 13 episodes ever, with more to come. Those early, like, original, super early episodes are you can't find those anywhere. Unless you're a channel member. But the episodes, I think, go back. God, I pushed out more of the older episodes to Spotify a few weeks ago. And that's still not all of them. But I'm working my way. I'm trying to add a few more there. So, yeah, if you didn't hear some of those older ones, episode like 200, you know, like the 200s and stuff, you should be able to find at least some of them now. Paul Heyman says the trio of Styles, Balor, and Liv Morgan from Raw. Can we call them the Bull Liv Club? Oh, that was bad. That was really bad. Paul Heyman, that might have been your worst. That might have been your worst super chat. And Rizzo, the independent contract is such crap. And I'm curious if AEW is the same way in their contracts. Wish the wrestlers in both companies team up and change the industry for the better. I don't believe that Tony Khan classifies his talent any different than WWE does. Of course, the big difference is that AEW talent in most cases, unless they're a top name that has a special contract that's exclusive. Most of the talent in AEW has the ability to book outside shots and work independently in other promotions. You know, WWE talent can't do that. So they I believe they're also classified as independent contractors. You know, they don't get benefits and pensions and health insurance unless you're one of the EVPs. But they do have the ability to work outside of the company. You know, they have certain luxuries that WWE talents just, you know, simply do not have. And certainly nobody in AEW has ever told the talent that you can't be on Twitch and you can't do this and you can't do that. So there are some very distinct differences in how the two companies operate. Ricky Edmond, if CM Punk had stayed with WWE, would he have feuded with the Authority? Yes. I think the timeline on that works. If he would have stuck around, it's very likely he would have. And Rambo Mode, 92. I'd love to see a Mets against Cardinals playoff series this year. You guys have had our number so far this season. By the way, what's your favorite ladder match of all time? Mine is Jeff Hardy against RVD, SummerSlam 2001. I do remember that match. That was for the hardcore title, I believe. That was actually a really good one. I remember, I think RVD, I want to say he did a rolling thunder spot to Jeff Hardy, who was laid across a ladder across the bottom rope. Do I have that right? I think that was a spot in that match. Favorite ladder match of all time, Jericho against Benoit at the Rumble in 01, that same year, has always been a favorite of mine. And so it might be between that one and the second one between Shawn and Razor. I've always loved the rematch they had at SummerSlam in 95. But I might, you know, I might have to go with Jericho and Benoit. I mean, at least in terms of the singles matches, if you're referring to that, that would probably be at the top of my list. Oh, I got the spot. Yeah, okay. Temjin says, yeah, we had the Rolling Thunder spot on the bottom rope. And I remember some of these things. Some of these random spots, for some reason, I remember. This stuff just kind of comes to me. Some good questions, though. And again, if you want more of those questions answered, check out part one of that members-only Q&A if you're a channel member. Part two going up on Sunday night. Right now, though, you don't have to be a member to be a part of this segment. We call this segment Be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
How appropriate. We have Sasha Banks on the screen. You know, now that she's been suspended, maybe Sasha will pop up and be the Booker tonight. Maybe Sasha will actually be back in the ring. I don't know. You never know what match I'm going to land on. We randomly take this thing for a spin and see what match we can book randomly, if we could do a better job than WWE and AEW as far as booking an actual match. And we begin here with the men. We begin with the men, and we begin with Butterbean. WrestleMania 15 star Butterbean, who absolutely knocked Bart Gunn the fuck out at WrestleMania 15. He just obliterated him. Absolutely destroyed him and ruined his career in a single night. And if I remember correct, I believe that Butterbean had another match on WWE pay-per-view. It might have been a faux boxing fight, was it, against Mark Merrow? I think he had another one. I think that was even before the match with Bart Gunn. So everyone's waiting for Bart Gunn now to pop up here. Well, we'll see. Let's see. Got Butterbean going one-on-one with Matt Riddle, who has a mixed martial arts fighting background. So we have Butterbean against Riddle. I think that could be an interesting one. I'm giving that the bell. You got two guys with legitimate fight backgrounds. I think that could be an interesting... If it was a match, just like a match, a fight, no rules, like Riddle doesn't have to wear gloves or anything like that. You just kind of put him in the ring. I think that could be an interesting match. Let's take the women's Be the Booker for a spin. That was not the match I was expecting to see tonight, by the way. Riddle against Butterbean. You never know what you're going to get in these Be the Booker segments. Well, I just did what WWE couldn't do. I just booked Xia Li. Come work for me, since they don't seem to really remember that she's even employed anymore. Although she did make a very brief appearance standing in the back on SmackDown tonight. What a great run she's had so far on SmackDown. Comes in as the protector. Comes in as a babyface. Has two matches. Disappears. Decides, you know what? I don't feel like protecting anybody else anymore. I'm going to protect myself. Another 5 weeks go by of nothing. Tonight, she stands in the back and watches television. This has been quite the career. When she goes into the Hall of Fame, I would not want to be the person who inducts her, who has to stand there on stage and give the description that I've just given of the early part of her career. So let's see who Xia Li is going to be stepping into the ring with. It will be Xia Li going one-on-one with Toni Storm. Yeah. All right. Finally, we got a good one. We got a good one on the ladies' side. Xia Li against Toni Storm. I'll take that. I like that match. There we go. Win-win tonight. I'm telling you, Riddle and Butterbean is an interesting combo. I was not expecting. But Toni Storm and Xia Li, I think that could be a very good television match. That's right. That's a Mae Young classic match. So that's a good week here on Be the Booker. And again, if you're joining late, I will be live next Wednesday. It is a live Dynamite celebrating 3 years of AEW, the go-home show, the go-home Dynamite, to Double or Nothing. There will be no live stream next Friday night, so a week from tonight I won't be here. I'm going to be doing commentary for the next House of Glory show. And so we'll be back the following Friday in 2 weeks for the Friday night streams. Yes, we will. Beowulf is a very big fan of the first TLC match at SummerSlam 2000. He was there live. Do you know that Devon Dudley was absolutely terrified? Hanging from the title holder. Remember when the ladder got taken away from underneath him and he was just hanging there? He's afraid of heights. Apparently Devon Dudley is deathly afraid of heights. And so, of course, they worked a spot into this match. These fuckers had to work a spot into that match. Poor Devon's hanging there, probably sweating bullets. Just hoping not to die. But the TLC 2 is my favorite of all the TLC matches. So, see, if you were to expand those, to go to the question that I was asked earlier on, if you were to expand it to, you know, favorite ladder matches, including all of the Money in the Bank matches and the TLC matches, Jericho Benoit... For me, it's probably between Jericho Benoit, now that I think about it, the second TLC match. That TLC 2 match at WrestleMania 17, that's a hard one to top. But it's almost like you have to grade it on a scale, right? Because you got six guys doing just absolutely crazy stuff in that match. It's very different than having just a one-on-one ladder match. So, singles-wise, probably Jericho Benoit for me. Overall, I might go with TLC 2. I'll throw another one at you. No Mercy 2008 for the World Heavyweight title. The big gold belt, Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho. They had a hell of a ladder match. I think that gets an honorable mention too. Yeah, Undertaker against Jeff Hardy on Raw is remembered for the finish and, you know, post-match Undertaker kind of endorsing Jeff. That's a memorable one too. You know, that's how you try to make a star in one night. There have been a lot of good ones. but some just stand out more than others. Is there video of Brett's first ladder match? Well, Brett was doing ladder matches in Stampede before he ever came to WWE. But yes, there is video of Brett's first ladder match. I have it. I have it on tape. And actually, I don't know for sure, but there is a section on Peacock. They did re-upload most, not all, but most of the old Coliseum videos that were originally on the WWE Network. I don't know that the video that had that match is one of them. Actually, I don't think it is. It was that Smack 'em Whack 'em home video. I have it on tape somewhere. But you can find it online. It was a Bret Hart Shawn Michaels ladder match from July of 1992. It was actually done as a dry run for the match they were going to do at SummerSlam. Had they not gone to Wembley Stadium 30 years ago this year, had they not gone to Wembley for SummerSlam that year, the other location that they were scouting for SummerSlam was Washington, D.C. And it might have been the MCI Center at the time, whatever it was called. And instead of Bret against Bulldog, it would have been Bret against Shawn. And they might have gone with that ladder match stipulation. So, I mean, look, things worked out, right? 80,000 people at Wembley. Big main event with Bret and Davey Boy going over in front of his home fans. But if not that, we would have had Bret and Shawn at SummerSlam for the title, possibly in a ladder match. Just didn't work out that way. Is Smack 'em Whack 'em on Peacock? Okay, great. So there you go. Find the home video section on Peacock. It's called Smack 'em Whack 'em. That's the same video that has Bret's first world title win over Ric Flair. It's on the same video. That ladder match is on that video. Bio just dropped a $5 super chat. Hey, Solomons, from me and my brother, love your show. What is your favorite Hulk Hogan lie ever? Thanks for what you do. I think it might be the one. I mean, there's so many of them. My God, how do you choose just one? But it might be the one where he said he tried out as a bassist for Metallica, and then I think Lars Ulrich was on. It might have been Howard Stern one year and said that he had no memory of this whatsoever. There was also the one where he said that he was offered the role that Mickey Rourke ultimately got in The Wrestler, or that the part was written for him or something. And I think Darren Aronofsky, the director, had to come out and say he was full of shit. I think Hogan said, yeah, it was offered to me, but I passed on it because, like, I didn't think I would do as good of a job as an actor as Mickey Rourke, so I passed. It's like, you know, I mean, there's so many of them. The one year where he actually worked, he worked like 400 days or something because of the time zone difference between flying back and forth to Japan. Like, it's just ridiculous. It's just absolutely ridiculous. Actually, I'll tell you this, and then we can wrap it up if you guys are getting tired here. But SummerSlam 92, we just talked about SummerSlam, right? 30 years ago this year. The first major pay-per-view that Hulk Hogan in the WWF did not appear on, even though he was still technically, I think, under contract with them. And years later, Hogan came out with an album, and there was a song on there called Hulkster in Heaven, which was written, I think, about a young fan who had passed away from cancer or something. And I think as Hogan tells the story, or how it all came about, or I think who the song was about, he, in interviews, has talked about, you know, being in Wembley and looking out into the crowd, because he had given a ticket to this kid to come to the show, and he knew that he had passed away when he was in the crowd at Wembley, and he looked out and he saw that the chair was empty. And he knew that this young fan had passed away. And of course, he was full of shit because he wasn't even on the show. He wasn't even in Wembley that year. But that's the story that he went with as far as who the song was dedicated to and how it came about. There's no bounds. There is no bounds that Hulk Hogan will not cross when it comes to telling a tall tale. You can create an entire encyclopedia volume out of all of the fibs. The George Foreman grill, that's another one, yes. The George Foreman grill would have been his. It would have been his, but he was out picking his kids up or something from school, and he missed the call. And so, missed them, so they called George, and George took it. Otherwise, it would have been his. I mean, you talk about bad luck. Yeah, that one. That's another one. I don't know. He told the lie that Layla Ali stopped him from committing suicide, you know, many years ago. And when people asked Layla Ali about it, she had no idea what he was talking about. Who knows? I mean, you know, it could have been a case where he was going to blow his brains out or something. And she just happened to call him at home at the right moment. And, you know, she maybe never would have known if he didn't tell her that she saved his life. That's at least possible. Some of the stories that he has told, it is just impossible. But he doesn't care. Either he doesn't care or he's told it so many times that in his mind now, it's fact and he actually believes it. If you tell a lie enough, you will believe it. It will no longer be a lie. You could give him a lie detector test and I guarantee you he would pass because he probably believes all of this bullshit. If he believes it, then in his mind, it's true. Ricky Edmonds says, my favorite Hulk Hogan lie was the Undertaker one in Survivor Series 1991. Yeah, that one really pissed off the Undertaker. But I did a whole segment on that on the podcast where I recounted that entire thing. He claims that Undertaker dropped him for real on his head, a little too or he was either he dropped him on his head or he dropped him on the tombstone on the chair in such a way that it jammed his neck. And so he laid there and he sold it and Pat Patterson and all these officials are huddling around him in the ring. And here's the golden goose of the company, right? And Undertaker is still a rookie. He's been in the company for barely a year. So he's shitting a brick in the back thinking, oh my God, I just, you know, dropped Hulk Hogan on his head and possibly broke his neck. And he's got to be thinking, man, my career is over. You know, I'm going to be branded as unsafe and they're going to fire me. And I told the story, when Hogan got to the back, he was laying on the floor in the back, and he was laying on the floor and saying, "Get Linda on the phone and my kids." Like he's fucking dying, or like he's got like a gunshot wound, and he's about to pass away. And before I do, please get my wife and my kids on the phone. And it's just ridiculous. And then, of course, it was weeks later that Undertaker watched the footage back. And he saw that Hogan's head didn't come close. And then he confronted him about it in the locker room. And I think that's when Hogan said, oh, my neck jammed, brother. My neck jammed. Like, so full of shit. That was when Undertaker completely lost respect for Hogan. That's when he knew. He said that's when he knew what Hogan really was. For that to happen before he realized exactly what Hulk Hogan was all about. Hulk Hogan is all about himself. Rizzo, last one. That Sasha shoot interview is going to be must-see for whoever is lucky enough to be the first to get that one. Yeah, let's get Sean Oliver on that. I used to love the kayfabe commentaries. Yeah, Sean Oliver is going to be starting a new podcast with Kevin Nash starting in July. They're going to be doing a weekly podcast together. Of all of the old like U-shoots and kayfabe commentaries that Sean did, and Sean did a lot of really good ones, I always enjoyed the ones with Kevin Nash the most. The Nash ones, honestly, every couple of years, I come across it on YouTube and I'll rewatch it. There's like a timeline, 1995. I'll rewatch the Nash shoots. He and Oliver just had this great chemistry together, and Kevin Nash is a great storyteller. So I always thought the ones with Nash were the best ones that he did. And I just saw the other day they were starting a podcast together. So surprised it took them this long. Surprised it took Nash this long to get in on the podcast game. All right, guys, thank you for joining me and hanging out with me here on a Friday night. I appreciate it. I appreciate all of the super chats and all of your support. Again, if you are a channel member, do yourself a favor. Go ahead and check out not only the latest Sound Off Gamer, that's for everybody, but for channel members, part one is up right now. Part two, 50 more minutes of audio and video. I don't know why I said audio. I'm on video for these. coming up on Sunday night. And that is exclusively for our channel member family. I will be live with you again on Wednesday for Dynamite, but don't forget, episode 757 of the podcast, the main audio show, on Sunday, dropping Sunday afternoon. Going to have a lot more to say about this Sasha Banks. My God, I'm losing my voice. If I'm able to do a podcast on Sunday and I don't lose my friggin' voice, I'll have a lot to say. Otherwise, I might do a video. Maybe I'll do like a sign language. And I'll sign the entire segment. I don't know how, but I'll try to sign the entire segment. Going to have a lot more to say about that Sasha Banks and Naomi situation. Wouldn't be surprised if even more news comes out between now and then about it. But I will be covering that and Ric Flair and another update on Tessa on the wonderful Tessa Blanchard. A lot going on this week. And I hope that you will join me then. Until then, have a good weekend and stay safe. Be well, guys. I'll see you on Sunday.